Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. This is our third installment of the Week in IndyCar News with myself and my friend and colleague Robin Miller. Robin, we are talking about the last week of February. We'll admit to folks that we're cheating a little bit. This is Wednesday night. We normally record these Thursday night, but I have some family business to tend to on Thursday and Friday. So if Lewis Hamilton quits the Mercedes F1 team and signs with Dale Coyne, I apologize. We're going to have to catch up on that next week. But Robin, the big news in terms of the upcoming season is we have two busy days of testing at Sebring, with the really busy part kicking off Tuesday at the short track there. You wrote about it. You spoke with Mike Hull. You got a feel for what happened. Tell us about that test. Lots of Hondas. Also had some quick Chevys too, but what went down there, and did they learn anything or tell us anything that might shape the season ahead?
I think the thing that's good about this particular thing is that Hull and Ganassi, the boys, have come from Chevrolet, so they know the tricks. And Hull was pretty funny. He's like, you know, we swept. They were 1 through 4 in quick times, but he said he thinks Chevrolet was just, you know, playing around and not really trying, kind of like at Phoenix on the last day, which is, he said, you know, that's kind of what they do. They're pretty conservative, and they don't show a lot during practice on a race weekend, let alone on a test. So while it sounds like they've made some strides, and you know, I mean, we all thought Dixon would be a competitor, no matter what engine he's got. But I think, you know, I talked to Rob Edwards today after their test. They tested at Sebring. And,
team manager, you know, for Andretti Autosport.
Like, right, Andretti Autosport, sorry. They were just kind of like, you know, I think everybody's like, yeah, we're just, you know, we're pretty happy. I'm surprised today's times weren't faster than yesterday's because there's so much rubber laid down at that joint. But, you know, Hull said the same thing Rob Edwards said. You know, you can win the Grand Prix of Sebring and go to St. Pete and Long Beach, and you're suddenly out to lunch because there's no grip there, and you got to figure out everything, and there's no rubber down. So it just sounds like to me that, you know, Honda, have they made some big strides? Have they made some competitive strides? I don't know. It's too early. It sounds like they have, but who knows how hard Chevrolet's trying.
So Hull would know, with the Chip Ganassi team having run Chevys for a couple of years, won a championship with it. We've seen Chevy in particular is not fond of showing their cards in IndyCar or sports cars before you get to the first race. So not a surprise that Chevy, granted, while they were very clear and fast at Phoenix, have to assume that there's more speed to come. And definitely, I wouldn't read a whole lot into Sebring. And then we had today, Robin, the second day of testing, where you had the Andretti team, you had the Schmidt team, you had some cool stuff going on with a car swap with Robert Wickens and James Hinchcliffe. We also had young Pipo Durrani and Luis Michael Doerbecker get their first runs in IndyCars. What did you hear about that?
You know, the one thing that you did, you talked to the sports car guy, Durrani, who's, what did he win? Sebring and the Rolex last year.
Oh yeah, he's a little badass. Yep.
So, and the fact that I always thought Robert Wickens should be in an IndyCar because he was so good in Atlantics, and there's a cool picture on Racer's website of Hinch kind of kneeling down talking to him when he gets ready to go out. So it was obviously for at least Wickens, since he's got a full-time, is it a DTM ride he's got, Marshall?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing that's cool is this was just supposed to be kind of a fun car swap thing, and for Wickens to, you know, get a feel, ends up being fastest of the three rookies right off the bat.
You know, give him another day and let's see how he did. But you know, you wonder if, you know, Durrani, does he want to be an IndyCar driver? He's only 23 or 24. Is that his aspirations, or he wanted to be Formula One, or what do you think?
I think he realizes Formula One isn't realistic, just because he's 23, which is ancient. He would have to hop back on a ladder, and you know, he'd be 28 before anyone considered him. So he really loved the IndyCar experience. Wouldn't go into whether there was truly an opportunity awaiting him with Schmidt, but also intimated that, you know, there's possibility that maybe another test or just something else could happen. One thing I didn't put in the story, which exclusive breaking scoop here, is he said he'll be coming to the St. Pete season opener just to take a look around. say hello to folks. You know, it's never a bad thing when you not only test an IndyCar for a first time, but make a point to show your face in and around the paddock. You know, he's someone who is easily spotted at an IMSA race, but I don't think most IndyCar team owners would know him from, you know, just a fan walking down pit lane. So that's a smart move for him. We know that the Dorbecker kid, too, from Mexico, is hoping that something will happen with Schmidt. And seems like with the sponsors that he has behind him, almost inevitable that kid's going to end up in IndyCar.
So he's got pretty big money behind him, Marshall?
Definitely, definitely. He's got telecommunications giant Telmex behind him, Carlos Slim and the Slim family. The Dorbeckers were very visible at the Phoenix Open test. I mean, they were being interviewed by everybody, spent a lot of time in the media center, just came up on their own and met a lot of folks. So, and every, you know, it's all positive. If you want to get here, good thing to do is to walk around, get to know people, and become part of the infrastructure. So,
well, that's the one way we could go back to Mexico City, too, with a Mexican driver, because that's what you got to have.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, which, you know, despite having some success last year, I guess he was the Auto GP champion in Europe, which is a championship that isn't really worth looking up or following because there's nobody really competing in it. But, you know, this kid does not come from having, you know, established himself as a star of tomorrow and lighting the world on fire. To find out that he was only 2 seconds off of Dixie today, that actually impressed me. That really impressed me. So I thought it was going to be more like three or four, and the Sebring short course isn't particularly technical, but granted, 2 seconds, it's a lot around there. I mean, it's only a 50-second lap, so if you think about most tracks where the lap time's about double, that would, in theory, be about 4 seconds. But nonetheless, for a first test and a kid that definitely needs a lot of testing and a lot of development, I would say that Schmidt, in theory, has a kid with the money to have them develop him into someone who would be capable of getting onto the IndyCar grid. Looking at some of the other stories this week, Robin, you and I spent a good amount of time at Phoenix speaking with IndyCar CEO Mark Miles, IndyCar competition president Jay Fry. I just spent about half hour today speaking with IndyCar communications boss CJ O'Donnell. So we've got a lot of cool kind of what's happening within the series type stories that we've put up, more that's coming. One of them that you put up that seemed to get a lot of interest today was about both Mark Miles and IndyCar looking at possibly going to a single TV partner. A little bit biased, obviously. You're part of the NBCSN crew. I'm not an official part of anything with NBCSN, but definitely sit in on as many Indy Lights races as I can. So probably freely admit there's a little bit of bias that we definitely like the folks at NBCSN. But do you have a thought on whether going towards one TV partner would be the best thing for IndyCar?
Miles said it best in that story when we interviewed him a couple of weeks ago. He's interested in one carrier if there's more network involved. In other words, he didn't like the fact there's only five races on the network TV, and right now there's in the contract, NBC's not allowed to show anything on NBC. So even if he could, if it doesn't go to just a single network, which includes obviously the network and the cable, whether it's ABC and ESPN or NBC and NBC Sports Network, he at least is trying to get the thing, the contracts and agreements redone so NBC would be allowed to show a couple, three or four races on NBC. So if you had five races on ABC and four or five races on NBC, it's so much better for the teams to get sponsorship, and there's so many more people get a chance to watch it. But as prejudiced as I am, because I do work for NBC, I think the fact that they've become the motorsports network, they got NASCAR, they got Formula One, and NASCAR really helped the IndyCar ratings last year, as we figured it would. So I just think if you could have one network, and it's NBC and it's NBC Sports Network, I think they're going to promote the hell out of it, and I think it's going to be easier for people to find and follow. And you know, I just don't think ABC cares about anything but the Indy 500. I think they've made that pretty clear through the years. Even when they had CART and CART was in its heyday, they really didn't do any special programming for CART. And they really didn't, you know, they showed tape delay races. It wasn't any big deal. They just, Indy was all they really cared about. So I don't know. There was rumblings that Fox might be a player. I don't know. I kind of find that hard to believe, but maybe. It's just that Miles said the most important thing he goes, money's the second most important thing, but the first thing is audience. And that's the most important thing. The more eyes and you got on network, the better chance you got to get some sponsorship.
We also spoke with Miles and Jay Fry about the 2017 schedule, thoughts about future schedules. Jay came out and said, you know, 20 is kind of that magic number that seems to have been around that they think about and talk about a little bit. Not as if they are saying outright, we want to go to 20, but they at least know that, you know, that sounds like a good number to consider for the future. Some folks had a very negative reaction to, you know, well, here, same old story, isn't this what killed, you know, CART and Champ Car? Too much expansion and trying to go to international races. And my answer at least was, well, it's kind of normal for any business, right? If Robin Miller Incorporated is thriving and the numbers are on the up and the profits are up and everything's going well, you'd probably look to expand. And if there's a downturn and the numbers are down and you're definitely not as profitable as you were, you'd probably look to contract. All the numbers right now, TV ratings, and you know, just about everything on the IndyCar front appears to be trending upward. So if I'm looking at future considerations, the thought to then expand the schedule a little bit, not such a crazy idea to me. But what do you think?
And Miles makes this clear too. Unless you have a couple of, you know, races outside of North America that pay you big money so you can give the teams big money, it's not worth doing it. But if you could somehow go to Mexico City, that'd be a, that could be another race that you could have in March, maybe. I mean, it helps get the season started early, have more races early in Mexico City. And, you know, Jay's talked about Homestead, and I talked about Richmond, but nobody else has, just because they used to get a pretty good crowd. But you just have to be careful, you know, how many, I think Brian Hurd has said in the story you did with me the other day, you know, you just got to be careful about, do these international races, do they help some sponsors, anybody? I mean, you just have to. But if the teams all get money, then, you know, that's the whole bottom line. The teams need more money. The purses aren't any good. The leader circle's not as much as it used to be. So if that's a way to find revenue and every team can make money and get their expenses paid going, you do it, I think.
We also got an update from Fry on the 2018 Universal bodywork, the fact that that's being not only tested right now, the scale wind tunnel, meaning probably 40% scale of the full-size bodywork, but they intend to move towards full scale here soon, hoping we might get a look at it during the month of May. He also said that they are aiming for a late July, sometime in August, possibly track test with the car. We know that the Mid-Ohio race weekend, I think, is something like July 30th, then there's about 3 weeks off until Pocono, so it would not surprise me that if they got everything done and had everything ready, if that car rolled out, you know, the Monday following the Mid-Ohio race for them to test there. I also have to believe, and granted, Jay didn't say where or when, when it would be tested, but knowing that IndyCar did a bunch of running at Mid-Ohio with J.R. Hildebrand and Tony Kanaan, taking, you know, certain aerodynamic pieces off, trying to run with this and without that, and just, you know, get a feel for what it was like with those two cars running together, and then took that data and really started formulating the 2018 bodywork plan, wouldn't be a surprise to see them kick off testing of the 2018 bodywork at Mid-Ohio, where they gathered a lot of that original data. So from everything I've heard, everything that Jay told us, sounds like they're making good progress, Robin.
The other thing is, do we know, has it been announced that Dallara is the aero kit manufacturer?
No, but no announcement of who has done the work.
We're pretty sure that's who it's going to be, aren't we?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me.
Somebody told me the other day that should know, I can't remember who it was, but said, oh yeah, Dallara's going to build. And it makes sense, because they've already ramped up. I mean, there's no big competition to build the aero kits. I mean, why not have them do it, right?
If it helps the series, if it helps the team owners from a cost standpoint, you know, I have no problem with it. At the same time, you know, I'm not a big fan of monopolies, especially knowing the gasoline alley has been wiped out over the past 5+ years because of everything on the Dallara DW12 being named a spec part and piece that you have to get from Dallara or Dallara's chosen vendors. So Obviously, IndyCar is looking to change that a little bit by deregulating some pieces, but nonetheless, is Dallara the one manufacturer that's perfectly placed to do these 2018 Universal kits? Yeah, absolutely. I rather hear that a smaller boutique company was able to get some business, you know, call it a mom and pop, but a small business was able to get into IndyCar and do something meaningful for the first time in, you know, a half decade. I'd probably like to hear that even more. And that's not saying anything against Dallara. It's just I'm a big fan of small businesses being able to get into our sport and do things that allows more of the monopolies. So the other thing too, Robin, is Jay also told us that it looks like they've chosen on going with one aero screen, which surprised me because you and I have heard from Tony Kanaan and some other drivers that they definitely believe they would have to have multiple aero screens based on the tracks that they go to. And, you know, some Texas with the high banking, that would require something different than maybe, you know, going to a flat track or, you know, road course and otherwise. But interesting to hear that it appears IndyCar has found one solution they believe will work everywhere.
Yeah, because one of the concerns, right, was looking around a high bank corner like a Texas. That was one of their big concerns about any kind of a screen or, you know, whatever they were going to try and put on it. So, I mean, you know, your story is the first one that has really kind of shown a light on what they're going to do. So, I mean, it got quite a bit of reaction. A lot of people said, well, it was probably inevitable. I'd really see open wheel and open cockpit, but it's probably a thing in the future. So, do you have any feel for what it'll look like, Marshall?
Yeah, Jay hinted at it. I mean, I haven't seen it. You haven't seen it, but Jay hinted at it in his final answer, basically saying that for what they've come up with, he said it's small enough that folks might not even really notice it when it's on the car. So provided that's accurate, I think that might be the best of both worlds. If it helps IndyCar and its drivers to achieve the cockpit and helmet safety that they're pursuing or that they've been trying to get without it being, you know, a big monstrosity like some of the things we've seen in Formula One that are just ugly. I mean, I realize they're there for safety, but looking at something that just really makes the cars unattractive to the eyes kind of goes against one of the reasons why we follow motor racing. Our boy Juan Monterior tested a Ferrari GT car for the first time the end of last week. Apparently went fairly quickly, enjoyed himself in the limited number of laps that he got, and a little something you and I have not written about, just because we figure, you know, I don't know, granted, you and I haven't seen him in a little while, so we'll bug him when we see him, but one of the things you and I have both heard is that he has signed a multi-year, possibly a three-year deal to stay with Team Penske. We've written about the Penske Honda Daytona Prototype International effort, which we know JPM had been earmarked for. So if we align some of the dots just on our own without having spoken to JPM, it sounds like our favorite Colombian two-time Indy 500 winner is going to be driving sporty cars for Roger for a couple of years to come.
Well, you got to think that he's, you know, I mean, Le Mans, the one thing, has he ever got to run Le Mans, Marshall, ever?
No, he was thinking about that, and he wouldn't be able to do that with these cars with Roger, but it sounds like just from an employment standpoint and more years of earning and enjoying himself, this is something that he could do, and also have to imagine that since Roger has decided to wheel out a fifth car for the Indy 500 for him to drive this year, that, you know, we could probably assume that that door might be open for him to do that again in the years ahead with Roger, even if he'd be concentrating full-time on sports cars.
You've been on top of that whole story since the start, but if it would be him and Elio teamed up in the sports cars, it would only make sense that they'd keep running at Indy because obviously they haven't lost much speed there.
No, not at all. All right, we're winding down here. A couple quick things to blow through. First of all, from last week, where you revealed that you and Paul Genovese threatened to kill one another. I've had folks ask if there have been any other death threats between you and team owners, whether it's both ways or one way.
No death threats. AJ slapped me once. Penske and I were gonna throw down at each other before the Pocono race one year. Pat Patrick, I think he was going to send some men to have me cement chewed one year, but then it fell through. So, yeah, Genelozzi's the only guy that ever said, I'm going to kill you, and I screamed, you better do a good job because I'll come back and haunt you. But it was during the national anthem. It was real classy. We were screaming at each other, and yeah, it was great.
It's patriotic. I like that. how did your gambling for the Daytona 500 go, by the way? Are you in debt? Are you hiding out? You call me from the bunker?
No, I had Clint Bowyer and Harvick and whoever I had, all three of them got taken out in the same crash. So that's what you get for betting stock cars.
Jesus, yeah, don't do that anymore. All right, a couple other quick news items, and I know you've got a good one for us to close on. On the just below IndyCar front, we have the reigning Pro Mazda champion, Wisconsin's Aaron Tielitz. Although we've known this for a little while, confirmed he'll be driving for Brian Bilardi's team in Indy Lights with the full season advancement prize courtesy of Mazda. So that's great for him, little AA Ron. And also the kid that ran a runner-up to him last year in Pro Mazda, Mexico's Patricio Pato Award. He has a full-season IMSA deal, but he's going to at least start the Indy Lights season with Team Pelfrey, so that'll be cool. We'll have those two, plus a kid that finished third in the championship, will be in Lights as well, so just good to hear that at least when we get to St. Pete, the top three in last year's Pro Mazda championship will be stepping up to Indy Lights. Then some big news, not really, but we're happy to hear it. Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports, it's a bit of a new or cool technical alliance with Lincoln. We have Ed Carpenter Racing that announced they will have Banker Financial as an associate sponsor for St. Petersburg. Biggest week of the news, though, Robin. I've saved it for last. I know you have been dying to tell the world about this. We both woke up to giant, giant news in the industry this morning. Green Savory Promotions, the people that promote the St. Petersburg Grand Prix, Mid-Ohio, and Toronto, they have signed a shoe deal with Pelote Shoes for all of their staff. Yes, friends, it finally happened. The biggest deal in motor racing, Green Savory Promotions has a shoe deal for their employees. So we get to St. Pete. I guess we will have to pose with the shoes the media folks are wearing or Green is wearing. Who knows? But I know you were thrilled when you heard this. And of all the news that's come out of IndyCar the last week, thank God the Green Savory folks have a shoe deal.
It's not quite as good a press release as the woman that wrote Johnny Benson's Cheerios release when he charged from 43rd to 39th on the first pit stop. But it's close. It's not bad.
All right, Robin, why don't you go ahead and take us home here for this, our third installment of the Week in IndyCar News.
Mario Andretti turned 77 on Tuesday.
I thought it was 76. No, that was
Wednesday. Well, I had it wrong. I can't even add. He was born in 1940. Of course, he said. I changed it finally on my Facebook page because I can't add. I flunked out of Ball State. We understand that. Well, this is just ridiculous. So I always call him up on his birthday, and we're talking and laughing, and he said, "You're not going to believe who called me 20 minutes ago and wished me happy birthday." And I said, "AJ Foyt." And he goes, "How the hell did you know that?" And I said, "I just guessed because you sounded so giddy." He goes, "It was so cool." He goes, "We talked for 15 minutes. It was great. I really appreciate it." So, of course, I hung. And he goes, "And by the way," he said, "Foyt fell off his tractor and broke two ribs last Sunday when he was on his bulldozer at his farm." So, of course, I call Foyt and I said, "Hey, did you break two ribs?" "Well, I might have bruised a couple of them. I fell on my phone. It might have saved me." But he goes, "And I couldn't get to my phone because I was laying on it." And he goes, "I had the radio on, listened to Daytona, and they crashed every 10 laps. And I was out there by myself, so I finally had to pick myself up." And I said, "You need a Hans device 24 hours a day. You really do." So that's two more things to add to Ann Fenoro's list of AJ Foyt injuries: bruised ribs or cracked ribs or broken ribs, whatever they are. But I said, "You know what? That's pretty damn cool that you called Mario." And he kind of tried to brush it off. But what you have to know is that they have immense respect for each other. They always have. No matter what AJ says sometimes to the press about, "I don't care about Mario Andretti. He didn't mean anything to me, blah, blah, blah." I think Car and Driver, somebody did a story. It might have been yours. I don't know. A couple months ago, and he was like, "I might not ever pay any attention to Mario Andretti." Sure he did. And he that big, blustery, tough guy, I mean, he respects Mario. And I can tell you this. Mario just thought that was the coolest thing ever, and I did too. Just that, you know, these guys have been locked. They're locked forever together in history. And that's why I always tell AJ, I said, "I don't care whether you you know, you guys don't have to go out and have dinner together, but you guys have, you know, two of the greatest places, maybe the two greatest drivers in the history of racing, and you know, you're always going to be joined together at the hip in the history books, and it's cool that you got along. But see, they had a breakfast a few years ago at Daytona for 4 hours and really had a good time. So, you know, it's just a cool way. It's a cool way to turn 77. AJ turned 82 a couple weeks ago, and Mario 77. Dan Gurney turns 86 in April. Marshall Pruitt turns, what, 27, 28? When's your birthday?
Yeah, well, December, and add another 20 years to that.
That's quite true, Marshall. I've done broke my ribs, but I'll be okay. Anyway, Floyd was actually happy on the phone yesterday when I talked to him, because Connor was like eighth or ninth, and he said they'd learned a bunch of stuff, so that was good.
Well, I think you've also identified a new potential sponsor and an acting gig for AJ, because with it seems like every story involves him flipping a tractor, driving the tractor into a ditch, into a river, getting attacked by bees on a tractor. I think Life Alert could definitely be a primary sponsor, and maybe we can get AJ to do one of those. Help! I'm falling and I can't
God,
get up.
God, that was a great commercial. That's a good idea.
See, I just found him $10 million.
We'll get you 15% of that.
All right. I like that. All right, folks. Well, thanks again for listening to the Marshall Pruitt podcast. We will be back. I'm not sure what we're going to do, actually. Next week, we start the IndyCar season at St. Pete. So instead of a week in IndyCar news, it might be a Robin and Marshall ramble about the season ahead and talk about any other things that pique our interest before we get to St. Pete.
We're making predictions.
Predictions coming up next week. All right, friends. Thanks so much.
Okay, Marshall. See you, buddy.